Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Shamitha Basu. We just heard about the challenges kids are facing during lockdown here in the United States. And pretty much everywhere, kids have been cooped up in their homes. But it's been an especially long time for children in Spain. The country was struck particularly hard by COVID-19. As of Wednesday, Spain had more than 220,000 confirmed cases and around 26,000 deaths. And while some have criticized the Spanish government for being slow to act, they did eventually put in place one of the strictest lockdown orders in the world. But in recent weeks, the Spanish government has taken steps to loosen some of those restrictions. Cafes and restaurants can now reopen, although only for delivery. And just last week, children under the age of 14 were allowed to go outside for the first time in 6 weeks. Linda Freund is a multimedia journalist based in Barcelona and the co-host of The Checkpoint, a podcast about parenting in a pandemic. She's been following the situation closely while also caring for her 6-year-old son. Linda, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So your son, his name is Arias, right?
That's right.
What was it like for Arias to finally go outside again?
It's an interesting question because I think what we're really seeing amongst children here is this sort of dissonance emerging. So he was indoors for 6 weeks along with 7 million other children across Spain who were basically invisible overnight. Set inside, seen not heard. It was really an adult-centric approach to virus containment here. We have no patio. We have no outdoor space. So he would basically run in circles in the living room and at times, you know, soak up some sun from an open window. It was difficult. But the fact is, we thought once we got that first news, he could go outside again, that he would be jumping for joy. But he wasn't, you know, so sure about it. When he got through the front door, he had his little mask on. He did skip initially, and then he quickly stopped. You know, and he looked around, and I think because the outside looks very different, and we as adults doing the shopping, going out for essential reasons, we had become habituated to the closed storefronts, the empty streets. But he saw that, and he got quiet. And so I asked him, you know, are you excited, right? And he said yes and no. And I said, well, why? He said, you know why, mommy, right? Like, don't ask me a stupid question. But I just want to point out this dissonance. It's quite clear for kids. I mean, for weeks, we were justifying being inside by telling him, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Coronavirus, they're out there. We don't want to let him get into the house. We need to stay healthy, wash our hands. And then, you know, overnight it's like, hey, let's go for a bike ride, get some fresh air. So the transition has been a difficult one initially. Many parent friends here were actually offering their kids toys just so they would go for that initial walk to help them muscle through that initial fear. But now what we're seeing, you know, more than a week later is kids are giggling again. They're scootering in the street. They're smiling, albeit at a distance. But we're seeing some of that life return and the comfort level return as well.
Have you noticed any changes in your son's behavior since the pandemic first started?
Absolutely. I mean, who wouldn't? Of course, when you keep a kid cooped up and all of a sudden, right, he is separated from his friends. He's saddled with more homework than ever before.
More homework? What is he, in first grade or second grade?
Yes, he's 6 years old.
Okay.
And basically, all of his friends, I mean, what he said to me the other day I thought was so interesting. He said, you know, mommy, it's like all of a sudden all my friends are stuck in the computer screen. It's like they all shrunked. You know, I thought about that and how kids are perceiving this. He's so used to just... kids like to just be with each other. I mean, that is play. It's not necessarily this kind of high-level conversation. It's about being in each other's presence. And when that is sort of taken away or done through this kind of medium where they're not presented at scale, I should say, that can warp things a bit.
You know, allowing children back outside is just one way that the Spanish government is relaxing their lockdown measures. What other steps is the country taking right now to sort of ease out of lockdown?
Well, we are in what's called essentially phase zero. So we have a multi-tiered, multi-phase system. And the reopening plan here in Spain, I think the name itself is pretty interesting. It translates as plan for the transition towards a new normality, which, like, first of all, I feel like the word normal should be retired right now. Like that.
I think you might be right.
Yeah. I mean, it just doesn't work anymore. But basically, we're in phase zero. So yesterday I was walking through the streets and I almost lost my breath because I saw a barbershop open and people were cutting hair again. People were taking appointments. There were some stores open with people who had had appointments waiting in lines outside to get articles of clothing. So that's phase zero. Now, depending on the numbers, and it is going to vary based on provinces and autonomous regions, Catalonia is asking for a slower reopening. Madrid, on the other hand, is pushing to move into phase one, like ASAP for economic reasons. But
and those two regions have been hit perhaps the hardest, right? Madrid and Catalonia.
Madrid especially, absolutely. So if all goes as planned, and we'll see, there are definitely debates in government about timing. If all goes as planned, the de-escalation for phase one would start on Sunday with small businesses reopening at 30% capacity, restaurants at 50% capacity. And what's most interesting for me is that funerals and wakes will now be able to accommodate 15 people, because before it was limited to only three, or in Madrid for a stretch, they were doing a lot of teleconferencing, or there was one priest I recall was offering drive-through funerals, you know, 2 minutes each. And I think what people really need with, what was it, more than 25,000 deaths here over the past few months is a chance to grieve together, a chance to share space, even if at a social distance, and just take in the gravity of everything.
And have Spaniards, for the most part, really been sticking to the lockdown?
That is a loaded question. I have witnessed personally both. I have witnessed a number of people who have worn masks, who have strictly kept their social distance, who have been very good about only leaving when they absolutely need it. I've also seen people who go to the market just for a stick of butter. I've seen and heard people in my hallways coming from a party who are, you know, a bit inebriated. So it definitely is a mix like anywhere. But, you know, what's interesting about that is you can really get your answer from the numbers. So if we look at the police activity since the lockdown, which was incredibly strict, more than 35,000 people were fined and 235 arrested on the weekend of May 3rd, when people were first allowed out. So these are people who are maybe talking too closely, going further from home than allowed, throwing parties. Mm-hmm. So there is still some interplay between government and individuals, and there are still some fines being administered.
What are experts saying about why Spain has been hit so hard compared to other countries in Europe?
There's a mix of reasons, though, frankly, we're learning new things about this virus every day. But there is a large grandfather, grandmother, elderly population here. And in fact, what makes Spain so wonderful is that families operate like a village. Grandparents are helping with the caring of children, picking them up from school, which also puts them in a vulnerable position based on how the virus transmits. I mean, as many doctors have said, unfortunately, children have become these vectors of contagion in this scenario. So we see the older population, of which there is a large amount, disproportionately affected.
You've mentioned that you have referred to what's happening right now to your son. You've called it Mr. and Mrs. Coronavirus are out there and we need to not have them come in. What other language are you using and how are you thinking about talking to your six-year-old right now?
I think the key thing to remember during this period and one thing that co-host Anna Cunningham and I really dedicate time to in our podcast is that kids are going to have a lot of questions right now. And the key is just to listen to their questions, listen to their approaches to everything, and take the time, even though you're incredibly stressed out and overwhelmed, even though if you're anything like me, you've probably found yourself in a fetal position or sneaking chocolate too many times. But that this is the opportunity to have some of those very serious conversations because they hear everything. So know, the other day at bedtime, I think this was actually in April, early April, when the numbers were peaking here. And every night we would hear sirens from our windows. And mind you, we don't live near a hospital. And our son was making the association. And he actually said to his dad at bedtime, I don't think I'm going to live old enough to decide if I want to have kids.
That was
heavy. And what that told me is he might have been testing it out, the idea, but that he was internalizing the number of deaths there. He was internalizing the number of deaths here. And what I realized as a parent, when I was having conversations with my husband, is that we were focusing so much on the death count, the contagion rate. I'm sure he overheard. We could have been more careful about that. But we weren't focusing as much on those who were healing. Mm. We weren't focusing on the victories and on the heroes. So we started to shift the conversation in the household, because after all, we are the gatekeepers of our household for our children. And so what we did is we mentioned a few friends who had been in the ICU, friends who Arius knows, and we started talking about how they have recovered. Some of them are going back to work. They're essential workers. Some of them are hugging their kids for 2-3 days straight, and that there are these moments of healing, and there are these doctors working tirelessly to make things better, to care for people. And, you know, we could tell that he had really internalized that conversation when the other day we were playing the game of life. Do you know the game of life?
Oh, sure. Classic.
Yeah. You can be a winner at the game of life.
So, right, right.
Yeah. We were playing the game of life, and he got to pick his profession, and he chose doctor because he wants to help people and save people's lives.
Oh, yeah. What a parenting win moment.
Oh, yeah. It's nice. I mean, you got to take them where you can get them these days.
Let me ask you, Linda, do you think this experience of being at home and parenting in a pandemic is going to change the way that you parent moving forward?
Wow, that's a really good question. It's interesting because I'm really operating day to day in survival mode, so I haven't had that chance to take a step back and put things into context. I definitely think that I've become more appreciative of the lighter moments, of the levity. I mean, the way I look at it is we're raising the corona generation, right? Our kids are glued to their screens. They're anxious. They're scared. Their parents are anxious and scared. They're also teaching us something pretty incredible: defiant joy. They're teaching us how to find strength, how to find laughter in the darkest of times. And I think I'll take that with me going forward, that with every dark moment, you can find some levity. Amid the challenges, you can take a moment to laugh about the fact that you asked your conference call if they have to poop. I mean, which did happen to a friend of mine, by the way. But the fact is, those lines are blurring now between everything in our lives, right? Between the public and private life, between the rich and the poor, between the sick and the healthy. And as those things blur, I think there also is a blurring of struggle and joy. And I think we can try to make out or carve out a place for ourselves as parents in both.
Linda Freund is a multimedia journalist based in Barcelona and the co-host of The Checkpoint, a podcast about parenting in a pandemic. Linda, thank you for joining us.
It was my pleasure.